Welcome to New Books Network. I'm your host, Erica Easley Hauser. In this interview series, we feature a newly published work and spend some time speaking with the author. Today, we're fortunate to have as a guest Dr. Stephen Hall, who's the author of an incredibly well-researched book entitled A Faithful Account of the Race, African-American Historical Writing in 19th Century America, published in 2009 by the University of North Carolina Press. As his title suggests, he writes about the trajectory of Black intellectual thought by examining the writings and rhetorical strategies used in African-American public culture in the 19th century. By examining a wide variety of sources, such as books, pamphlets, speeches, and sermons, he argues that there were many changes over time in the themes of Black historical writing in four distinctive moments of the 19th century and into the turn of the 20th century. He ends his work by examining the Black Academy to explain how African-American history became institutionalized, particularly at historically Black colleges and universities. His wide scope demonstrates his keen ability as a scholar to build upon existing scholarship. Listen in to learn more about his work. We have on the call today Dr. Stephen Hall, the author of A Faithful Account of the Race, African-American Historical Writing in 19th Century America. Dr. Hall, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Will you tell us a little bit about your background before we get into the book? Tell us a little bit about maybe some of your mentors, or basically who kind of inspired you to write this work?
Yes, well, I can say that the interest in this work actually goes back to my undergraduate years. I was trained in the Black Academy at Morgan State University, and it's really there that many of my ideas crystallized. I had the good fortune to know and work with Benjamin Quarles, who was really the dean of African-American historians and wrote a number of the pioneering works on Frederick Douglass and on the African-American experience in the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, and one of the first real books on Lincoln and the Negro. And then, of course, I also work with Lawson Durwood Penn, who is known as the dean of African-American women's history. Her work with Sharon Hartley in 1978, The African-American Woman, Struggles and Images, is really a classic. And then she also did an important dissertation on Black women's suffrage that was recently published by Indiana University Press, even though it was their doctorate dissertation, called African-American Women and the Struggle for the Vote, which is probably one of the most widely cited dissertations on the topic, and really is the definitive piece. And so she was really inspirational, I think, because she was interested in African-American women's history and the diaspora. When I went on to MA study at Wisconsin, I worked with Brenda Gale Plummer. And Brenda Plummer was really influential in helping me to sort of think more critically about the diaspora. And she's obviously done her pioneering work, Rising Wind, which really looks at the development of Black foreign policy constituencies in the first half of the 20th century, really is the definitive work on sort of helping us to kind of think about the Black as a transnational subject and also about Black internationalism. And so taking courses with her and interacting with her was really, I think, very influential for me. And then at the doctoral level, working with Stephanie Shaw, who's done work in African-American intellectual, African-American women's intellectual history and institutions, and really sort of shaped my sort of thinking about how to write, how to think, how to analyze and look through various issues. So these ideas, I think, have been germinating, at least in my mind, for a very long time. And my interest, I think, in combining my interest in Black intellectualism, Black African-American historiography and historians, along with my interest in Black women's history and Black internationalism sort of comes together, I think, in this work, A Faithful Account of the Race.
Okay, great. Really interesting background, and you've worked with some amazing, I mean, especially, you know, Benjamin Quarles and Stephanie Shaw, especially. I think that's really interesting. I was also interested, especially with your title. I wanted to know, where did it come from, A Faithful Account of the Race? What did you want readers to kind of walk away when they see that title thinking about in terms of your overall thesis of your work?
Yes, that's an interesting question. One of the things I wanted to think about two things. The work is, all of the titles, the chapter titles, and the title of the work are actually drawn from the writings and the thought of African-American writers, men and women, in the 19th century. And so the title of the work, A Faithful Account of the Work, really speaks both to the source of the paraphrase quote, which is actually William Wells Brown's The Rising Sun, which was a book of Black history that I discussed in the work in the mid-1860s. And what Brown is trying to do, of course, is to talk about, to situate African-American history in the aftermath of the Civil War and sort of bridge or straddle the line between the enslaved Black and the emancipated Black, and is really trying to suggest that indeed what he's going to do, of course, given the former situation of the race, is to really write a history that gives the best account that he can of the race. And so I thought it was a fitting title because, again, when I look at the work of all of these writers in the 19th century, they are working, they're not working in a moment where there is no intellectual tradition among African Americans, but they are working in a moment where there are great challenges for African Americans, slavery, Black degradation, Black dehumanization, and other sorts of things going on an everyday basis. And so they are really working to define themselves and define their humanity as more than slaves, as more than chattel, as more than marginalized citizens. And so the title of the work then speaks to this broader sort of text around their sort of serious and engaged efforts to really write a critical and analytical, deeply interpretive works about the African-American past, but not only sort of talk about their contemporary condition, but really sketch their history back to the first ages of humankind. So it really transcends the particular moment and really seeks really to humanize them in ways that were quite inconsistent with the reality of Black people in the 19th century.
Okay. Interesting. I also thought, speaking of that question about, you know, some of the sources that you talked about, and I know, especially for the study of 19th century African-American history, one of the challenges oftentimes for historians is finding sources. And I mean, there are a lot of sources that you talked about. I know my favorite is the Robert Benjamin Lewis text that you talk about. But can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the sources that you were able to find and include in your work that you may think that are not as studied by scholars or that perhaps need to be further studied?
Yes, I think one of the challenges with the writing about African-American historical writing in the 19th century is that most scholars really don't think that the historical production during the period is historical. And so in many instances, 19th century historical writing is written out of historical coherence. It in fact is not viewed as being as scholarly or as important as the 20th century historical work that's produced by African Americans. And so one of the challenges I had, of course, was to really connect this 19th century writing to the 20th century and really situate it as a real antecedent, a forerunner, as a precursor. And so in terms of works that I thought were important or really groundbreaking, I think we probably need to think about a little more. I would start with one of the first studies that I talk about in the book, Jacob Olson's A Search for Truth or an Inquiry for the Origin of the African Nation, which was published in 1817 and then was initially given as a speech in New Haven and then in New York. And the AMEEZ, the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Bishop Christopher Lush, then saw to its publication, and it's really a fascinating work because it pulls together African American engagement with the intellectual projects of the 19th century, the engagement of Black writers with things like classicism, engagement with the Bible, their engagement with the broader intellectual constructs of the day. And so this piece really uses those intellectual projects to make a broader case for African-American humanity. And so this is, I think, the foundational work that many subsequent writers build upon. And I was fortunate in my work to be really the first person to really utilize the work and really explicate it and interpret it in such a way that it, of course, sheds light on some of these broader issues and projects of African-American writers in the period. You mentioned, of course, Robert Benjamin Lewis's Light and Truth. And of course, this is a wonderful history published first in 1836 in a more abbreviated version, and then in a broader, more expansive version in 1844. And Robert Benjamin Lewis was of mixed Native American, African American heritage. And most people who have looked at his work really view it as something that's really, because of the methodology that he uses, the approach that he is engaged in, it's sort of this encyclopedic discussion of the place of persons of African descent in world history. It's sort of viewed as, most people sort of dismiss it as kind of one of the early precursors of the Afrocentric text of the 20th century. But what Lewis is really trying to do, and this is another important point of the piece, as I mentioned earlier, African-American writers are using the intellectual constructs of their day to make broader, and intellectual ideas, intellectual context of their period, to make broader points about who they are, and especially about their humanity. And so Lewis, like many writers of his time, is writing a universal history. But he's not writing a universal history of Europeans. He's writing a universal history of African people. And he says as much in the title of the book. But invariably, many historians prior to my own work have sort of looked askance at these sorts of things. And I think in some senses have sort of thought about it. More thought about this work more in 20th century terms as opposed to 19th century terms, and so fail to sort of contextualize the work, and so they sort of view it as being deeply problematic. But when we look at it as a universal history, a history that's essentially seeking to chart the history of a group from the first ages of humankind to the present, it's a fascinating encyclopedic sort of discussion of the accomplishments, the history, the projects of people of African descent. And in some senses, it's really, truly a transnational history in some ways, in the extent that people were engaged in those kinds of projects in the 19th century. I would also say David Walker's appeal to the colored citizens of the world, which I think is a fascinating document, because it really speaks to Walker, like Lewis, like Olson, is really interested in sort of thinking about how to deploy ideas of reason and rationality embedded in the American Enlightenment and the European Enlightenment, how to sort of think about this, the project of African Americans in the classical world, and sort of look at the treatment of people of color and the institution of slavery as it existed in the ancient world prior to its racialization in the American context. He's very interested in sort of challenging using Enlightenment ideas regarding reason and rationality, and challenging, using those ideas to really challenge the practice of slavery and the debasement and dehumanization of Black people. And he's also engaged, which is another sub-theme in the book, sort of thinking about this whole notion of the African diaspora, and is very interested in the projects of Black people, who he sort of calls citizens of the United States. And so he says in the title there, you know, to appeal to the citizens of the world, but expressly to those in the United States. But nonetheless, he has a very broad transnational vision of persons of color, and really sees the history of Black people as transcending the national and domestic moment, and sort of really encompassing a broader project, not only in terms of the transnational moment in the 19th century, but in fact going back to the first ages of humankind. A lot of those interesting examples really are drawn from the classical world. And so he's really interested in really looking carefully at these histories to really raise some interesting questions about the problematic of American democracy and the limitations and the way in which many of these projects do dehumanize people of color. And then I would say Gertrude Mozell's The Work of Afro-American Women in 1894. What a wonderful piece. And it's a piece very much like Anna Julia Cooper's Voice South, which really seeks to talk about the importance of African-American women. I have an interesting phrase from a club woman, a Mrs. Frazier, who says, in reference to one of the more important race encyclopedias of the period, which was called Men of Mark. It was by a man named William D. Simmons. And she says, Ms. Frazier says, we have had heard enough of the men of Mark. We need to now talk about the women of Mark. And so that inaugurates, I think, and of course, I've been, obviously, it's my book tries to show it, African-American women, Glenn Beck, Mariah Stewart, and people like Ann Plato and others are writing and thinking about the African-American edition, that they are working closely with other African-Americans to frame a broad discussion that, of course, includes the plight of African-American women, and to sort of think more critically about the contributions that Black women have made to historical knowledge. And so you have I talk about a number of women, Frances Owen Harper, Lila Ames Felton, Anna Julia Cooper, and others who are really deeply engaged in thinking about the historical role that women have played in the broader discourse surrounding the creation of African American history. And so this work really, I think, sort of tries to bring together all of those sensibilities and really suggest then that without understanding 19th century historical production and all those themes of Black intellectual engagement with the domestic and international projects, the broader sorts of engagements with classicism and the Bible, the broader projects of African-American women and gender, that we really cannot understand how this project has evolved in the 20th century. And so we are ultimately then truncated and blunted in our visions if we don't have a good sense of this 19th century project, because it really does lay the groundwork for subsequent historical work.
That's really interesting. It actually makes me too think, you know, in terms of thinking about your work and sort of placing it in a broader perspective of thinking of other historical texts and even other works outside of history that I think kind of have a similar, you know, methodological approach of covering just such a long period of time. I mean, in your work, you start with, you know, the early American Republic and you go all the way until the Reconstruction era, and then you end with the conclusion chapter talking about the Black Academy. So I just wanted to maybe see if you could tease out maybe how your work kind of fits into these sort of other projects that I think also kind of cover this long 19th century moment, you know, and really trying to complicate it further than perhaps it has been done, you know, in the past.
Yes. Well, what the project seeks to do, I mean, in terms of the chronological focus, it was very clear to me as I was looking at the work is that African Americans in the 19th century are very much contextually bound. They are contextually bound and, of course, and driven. And they're also then conversant with the intellectual movements and the ideas of the 19th century. And so much of their work, much of their project, of course, is devoted to amplifying the notion of Black humanity. And so I thought then that by following the traditional trajectory of American history, we could get a very good sense of how they were responding to different events and moments and also intellectual movements and how they were deploying these moments and taking advantage of these moments to amplify this notion of Black humanity. It's very clear also that we cannot understand this tradition without looking at it in a holistic way. And so we've got to really sketch it out over a long period of time in order to see how these writers are sort of thinking about themselves in an enslaved moment and in an emancipatory moment. And what are some of the similarities and what are some of the differences in terms of these broader sorts of projects. And what we see in the work is that as we move through the 19th century, from the late 18th century to the early 19th century, in terms of the authority of the American Enlightenment and the European Enlightenment, the authority of classicism, the notion of classical republicanism, we move then to shifting ideas about blackness, and also ideas about intellectual life, the shift from the authority of classicism, if you will, to a more intense shift, at least among historical writers in the 1830s and 1840s, to this non-text of romanticism, which is a different attempt to kind of look more at the near past in order to sort of make assessments about the nature of the Republic. And this is also a moment where we're seeing the rise of black nationalism, we're seeing all sorts of interesting things around manifest destiny and other sorts of Native American removal and a host of other sorts of projects going on simultaneously. Black slave revolt, the shift from the slave project being shifted from the eastern seaboard into the interior, the intensification of the domestic slave trade, the intensification of the abolitionist movement. And so African Americans are involved in all these projects, and they're deeply engaged in sort of thinking about the projects and using history to think about these projects. As Americans are sort of moving towards the Civil War in the 1850s, the African American writers deploy history, people like William Nell in the Colored Patriots of the American Revolution. They talk about, they try to remind the nation of the centrality of the black to the revolutionary principles. And as they're fighting against the slave power, this conglomeration of individuals who are seeking to extend slavery from sea to shining sea, that indeed they are sort of interested in sort of recalling heroic sacrifices of blacks and, of course, fighting to bring them into the institution, fighting what they call an anti-slavery war. And so we see this again in the post-Reconstruction, Reconstruction and post-Reconstruction period, with people like William Still, who does the Underground Railroad. He's the head of the Philadelphia Vengeance Committee from 1851 to 1861. And in the aftermath of the Civil War, he then reconstructs his history to keep the memory of abolitionism alive and the role that blacks and whites play in undermining the institution of slavery at a moment when black rights are being undermined again in the Reconstruction period and its aftermath. And so they're sort of keeping the light of freedom alive and using history to do this. So it's a very real. And approximately, so as we move into the academy, what we see then is a natural progression. We see then the interest in education, the establishment of these local black colleges and universities by the time we get to the post-Civil War period. We see the rise of a more sustained black middle class as a result of these institutions. And so we see then that history, of course, is changing again. And professionalization and scientism and objectivity are taking a hold. And so it's helpful, I think, to look at the Black Academy and its role in the construction of history. Because invariably, we think that Black history courses really emerge as a result of the ferment and tumult on campuses in the 1960s, right? And so what we see here is that Black colleges are really in the forefront. Long before the African American Studies moment in constructing the Black path, and that indeed many of these individuals are using a lot of these earlier works from the early 19th century to construct this project. And this project is closely linked to accentuating black humanity, fighting against the retrenchment of black rights in the post-Reconstruction period, fighting the text of lynching, nativism, of reconciliation, and so on. It is community-based. So these kinds of projects become very important. People collecting the history of the race in their homes, and so on, and all of that really does lay the groundwork subsequently for the kind of courses that you see at places like Tuskegee at Howard and Hampton University and at other black colleges and universities, and then, of course, subsequently lays in the groundwork for the coming of the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, as it was called, in 1915, and then really fueling a real move towards what would become the African American Studies movement in the 1960s. And so, so in this sense, the policy trajectory is really to give us a roadmap, a way to think about the contributions of these early writers and the complexity and the vast array of writings, the types of writings, race books and encyclopedias and other sorts of things that were being written African Americans. It's really an outpouring of literature. And so one cannot argue that indeed there are scant sources and few mm-hmm. materials available. Indeed, what one finds is a plethora of materials mm-hmm. to study and to think about the Black past in the 19th century. And so it really gives a lie to the argument that there isn't much there. There's mm-hmm. part of it. And so these 19th century people do so important work.
Okay. Yeah, that actually makes me think, too, when you're especially thinking about teaching undergraduate students. I mean, and I think it helps me even think about, you know, using your work as a survey text to really help them understand, you know, that there is a world outside of the 20th century text, you know, that you're talking about in terms of, you know, the Carter G. Woodson moment or, you know, even this, you know, idea of Afrocentricity. And I just wondered, you know, how you would kind of even think about trying to translate, you know, your work to an undergraduate audience to really help them think about, you know, these complexities of the 19th century.
Right, yeah. Well, I think one of the issues here, of course, obviously, as I said, is to really think about African American history is not simply, I think in the 20th century, we sort of see it as sort of connected to a moment of insurgency, a moment of, it's an oppositional text, it's a nationalist text, primarily, in the sense that it emerges at a moment where it's either Carter G. Woodson or Du Bois bring it to the fore in the early 20th century, or it's a project that you sort of can look at the 1960s, and it's an insurgent moment. It's arriving as a result of the second half of the civil rights movement, the Black Power moment. And in that moment, it comes to the campuses, it feeds on white guilt, it feeds on the whole notion of setting the wrongs right, and mm-hmm. it appears in this very insurgent form. And so one of the things I would say is that indeed one of the ways to sort of think more critically about it, of course, is to move away from a more presentist understanding, an anachronistic moment, mm-hmm. where we're sort of reading the present onto the past. And so in any moment then that we see an engagement with the ancient world or with Africa or with the Bible, then indeed we see it as an insurgent moment, a nationalist moment, a Afrocentric moment, right? But indeed, when we look at the 19th century, we see, and by sort of appreciating and thinking more critically about the contextually driven nature of Black history in the 19th century, being very much sensitive to the reality that African Americans were looking at, the whole text of African American, the project of African American history being linked to the amplification of Black humanity, and the idea that indeed African Americans are using a wide variety of methodological approaches that aren't always insurgent, right? Nationalist, contributionist, that is to, you know, amplifying Black contributions or vindicating or trying to prove that African Americans belong. But indeed, they are really drawing on the Bible. They're drawing on classicism. They're drawing on a wide variety of the extent intellectual tools in the day to make a case for Black humanity. And so they're not making a case necessarily against someone else, right? They're making a mm-hmm. case for their own humanity and their own place, and to say quite clearly that they too have played, men and women, a very important role in helping to make humankind what it is today. And so that's mm-hmm. a very important sort of project, I think, in terms of thinking about the project. And I think also that speaks to the complexity of the work as well, that indeed it is a work that really is just drawing on a number of things. It really does have much to tell us in terms of looking at African Americans as complex subjects mm-hmm. and individuals who are working on a wide variety of traditions and possibilities, and those things can really coexist. So it isn't really this kind of binary where it's either nationalist or Afrocentric or you're not, right? or you're problematic. In fact, there are a wide variety of intellectual traditions that African Americans are involved in. And it helps us, I think, to think more critically about the diversity in our own populations, the diversity of thought, diversity of affiliation, diversity of engagement, of how people are thinking about the world, and the very places where people come from in terms of how they think about the Black experience, what that is, mm-hmm. you know, and how to make sense of it. So I think in that sense, it can help us think more critically about these broader projects. And even, you know, we obviously are in a post-racial moment, we're in an Obama moment, and of course we look at the complex origins of the president, and they say, well, you know, this is a new black, right? But again, if we look at these 19th century writers, we find a lot of complexity in terms of their makeup. You know, we talk about people like Robert Benjamin Lewis and many others who have very complex makeups and all sorts of interracial interactions, interracial, intra-ethnic kinds of interactions. And so you can see and the engagement of people of color with a wide variety of transnational moments, right? And so this is really not a new phenomenon, but in fact, it's something that is quite relevant. And so when we can appreciate the 19th century really on its own terms, we can think more critically about our 20th and 21st century moment, and we can really see these things along a broader continuum. That is not to say, then, that 19th century moment is the same as a 20th and 21st century moment. That would be indeed a non-academic moment. But indeed, we can see the origins, we can see some similarities, we can see at least these concerns being articulated among African intellectuals at a very early moment. And so this is not a new moment. So I think that's
Yeah, that's interesting. I was thinking that in terms of, you know, thinking about this post-racial kind of debate and you know, just kind of placing your work to really explain that notion even really kind of ignores, in my view, the 19th century completely, on the present. So I think that's a really valid point, and I think something that really could be a great conversation to have with students, who might sort of misunderstand that concept of post-racial and what sort of the pre-racial they could even use such a term.
Right.
I also wanted to know too, I guess, you know, where do you go from here? What are some of the things that you are researching or sort of, kind of taking this project and are you kind of moving in other directions with the project or working on other things?
Yeah. Immediately I'm working on a edited book with another scholar at Michigan State University, which is tentatively titled African American Historians and Historiography in the 20th and 21st Centuries. And what we're hoping to do is assemble a team of scholars to sort of do some recovery work, as I do in this work, in terms of looking at some little known, unknown African American historians in the 20th century, and to really do some biographical treatments of those individuals, and then also to look at the field of African American history in general, things like slavery, women's history, civil rights projects, and really try to update the historiography on the development of African American history as a specialty area, in ways similar to August Meyer Elliott Rudwick's Black History in the History Profession and Historical Profession, which came out in 1986. So we're hoping to update that book and really provide some useful insights to help really serve as a guidebook for both undergraduate and graduate students to give them a current sense of what's going on in the field. And then secondly, I'm working on a study which is really an extension of this study called Framing Global Visions, African American historians write about the world, and it go from 1885, the Berlin Conference, right up to 1960. And what it attempts to do is really continue to talk about the role that African American historians play as activists, as thinkers, as individuals involved both in the academy and outside of the academy, in terms of accentuating the idea of African diaspora. And how that concept develops and how these historians are deeply engaged in forwarding that project prior to the civil rights movement. And so in that sense, and it builds on some of the stuff that I encountered in the first study and really extends it into the modern period. It helps us to kind of even think in more critical ways about the Woodson Project, the Boisean Project, and to think about were the nascent projects of Black historians in the first half of the 20th century. And I think it positions us well to begin looking at the pioneering role that African Americans have played in forwarding notions of globalism, transnationalism, and of the African diaspora.
Okay. Well, that sounds really interesting. I definitely look forward to reading that work.
Yeah.
Well, Well, Dr. Hall, I do want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today about your work, and I certainly will be in touch with you.
Okay, thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, goodbye.
You've been listening to New Books Network. We've been speaking with Stephen Hall, author of A Faithful Account of the Race, African-American Historical Writing in 19th Century America, published in 2009 by the University of North Carolina Press. For more information about this podcast series, you can find us on the web at newbooksnetwork.com or follow us on Facebook to leave questions or suggestions about new books you'd like to hear more information about. I'm Erica Easley Hauser, and thanks again for joining us.